Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
What a great podcast this is. Everyone keeps
what a
telling
way to
me.
Start.
Welcome back to your favourite podcast. I'm saying that. I'm making a few assumptions.
Quite a few leaps.
Anyway, gathered again for another Confessions podcast from your friends at Greatest Hits Radio. Sister Susie's in the saloon bar.
I am indeed.
Brother Matthew is in the gutter.
As per, yeah.
And therefore, we're all gathered and ready to get on with the service. Coming up, we visit the parish notice board and catch up on the goings-on this week. We'll peek once again into Susie's folder marked Not For Broadcast. There's a bonus condiment confession from Chunky. We find out what on earth is going on here.
At this point, the balding gentleman had freed himself from the tenacious pants. And they're now...
Seen them live.
That's a phrase I've never used before. Yes. And the confession from the crypt featuring a bikini malfunction and a bald head. And, of course, you get to hear this week's confessions from the Simon Mayo Drive Time Show. What a show that is.
What a great show.
On Greatest Hits Radio. What a station that is.
What a station.
Including Marmaduke's Sports Day Revenge, The Race Is In My Head. I mean, I thought of the title. Doesn't make a lot of sense now. Looking at it now.
No.
I think that's a yellow. Do you remember Yellow, the race?
Yes.
It's a quote from that. That's
now,
what it's
we?
From.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Jeff's confession, Last Train to London. But first, we have an excellent Easter.
Excellent. Love it. Yeah.
Easter confession.
Carry on.
From another Simon. This one is called The Not Very Righteous Brothers. Very good title. I thought of that.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Simon in Plymouth.
Ah.
Father Simon, Brother Matt, and the ever-forgiving collective, and my regards to the drinks trolley.
Uh-huh.
That's the first time the drinks trolley has had a mention. This Easter, I was reminded of something I did over 40 years ago and is on my conscience even, and I really do need to confess this. And this may well be a scene that has been replicated up and down the country over the last few days. It's the early 80s, and I was just 9 years old and living with my mum, stepfather and stepbrother. Easter was coming and my mother arrived home from a shopping trip with a clutch of yummy-looking Easter eggs. Wow, I said, are they all for me? No, she says, somewhat aghast. You can keep your hands off till Easter. Right, okay. That seems to be that they are for me, but not until Easter. Mum clocked the look of mischief in my eye and immediately grabbed them and put them on top of her wardrobe where they were totally out of reach. I mean, there's ladders and so on, but anyway, yes. They were out of reach.
Yeah. Yeah.
All hopes of some early chocolate thoroughly thwarted, I carried on with my week. Towards the end of the week, I ran up the stairs to my bedroom and I heard noises coming from my mum's bedroom. Not those kind of noises, though.
Good.
It was my stepbrother. He had spotted the stash of Easter eggs and being much older than me, 19... and more importantly, much taller than me, he had successfully reached them and was chomping into the dark chocolate Easter egg, which was his. Wow, I said, Mum's going to be so mad with you. I'm going to tell her right now. Classic brother discourse.
Yeah.
To which my brother said, hang on a second, don't you want some chocolate too? But she's going to find out, I said. He shook his head knowingly, and I watched as he reached up on tiptoes and grabbed an egg. He carefully opened the cardboard, slid out the egg, a milk chocolate egg, with meticulous precision, and not breaking a single piece of the chocolate, he split it in half and gave me half.
Oh.
He then took the remaining half, rewrapped it, and placed it back in the cardboard box, popped it back on top of the wardrobe. It looked perfect. Looked like it hadn't been touched. It was amazing. Elder brothers, huh? You would never have known. I happily munched on the delicious milk chocolate egg half. I ate all of it. Day before Easter came and Mum reached up for the tampered egg and she turned around and said, OK, get yourself ready, we're off to Mary and John's. She was my mum's friend and her son, a rather portly lad that could have done without any more chocolate, thank you very much indeed.
Okay.
And he thought he was better than everyone else.
Right.
And a proper mummy's boy as well.
OK, wow. I think we know where this is going. Go on.
But why did she have that egg in her hands? I asked her, she said, oh, this is for John. Your eggs are waiting for you downstairs. So all the journey there, I'm trying to come up with something to explain why the egg is only half full. We arrived at the house and had the usual hellos and the ruffling of hair. And then he appeared like Dudley Dursley in Harry Potter, in all his glory, sporting Already a chocolate-smeared blazer and a can of pop in his chubby fingers.
Okay.
Wow.
Mum handed him the egg and he grabbed it and started to unwrap it. Hang on, said his mum, you haven't had your tea yet. Phew, I thought, saved by sausage, beans and potato waffles. Then, catastrophe. Here, he exclaimed. In his greediness, he thought he'd discovered my crumb. Half of this egg is gone. Half of it is gone, look. Half of it is gone, half.
Half, yeah.
My mum looked at me and I thought, OK, here we go. Was this you? She yells, then almost immediately carried on. No, it can't be, because it was on top of the wardrobe. Must have been your brother. He's so much taller than you, being 19.
Uh-huh.
But no, he doesn't like milk chocolate. So how can this have happened? Right, she said, I'm going back to the store. They can't sell me half an Easter egg.
Oh, no.
She grabbed my hand and we said a quick goodbye and we were off. As soon as she walked into the store, she grabbed a rather alarmed-looking shop worker, ranting about faulty goods and how she knew her human rights. I sheepishly hid behind her, praying for it all to be over. The manager even came out and recognised her from a previous cauliflower episode, another story we don't speak of, and said I'll just give her what she wants, and then he scurried back to his office like the coward that he was. We were furnished with two eggs for the inconvenience, and we went on our way, Mum thoroughly pleased with herself, and another battle against the man and corporate greed was won. Ha ha! John got his complete egg, and I was gifted the other one for being so good. And yes, the guilt was extreme. It did taint the egg, but I did consume it nonetheless. Father Simon, I do need to ask for forgiveness from the store worker and from Mum for all the hassle, as it was me who ate half the egg. But in my defence, it was all my stepbrother's fault. Isn't it always? I think that's what we learn from drama and from history. I throw myself on your mercy and pray for forgiveness. I think it's always blame the stepmother, stepfather, stepbrother, stepsister.
Yeah, that bit of history.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sister Susie, speaking with a voice of authority.
Well, Simon, very, very clever. The thing I can't get over is not breaking the egg when you're going to break it in half. Because every time I've tried to do it, they just split into tiny, tiny bits, and I would never have got away with
that. That was his stepbrother, yeah.
That did it, yeah. He must have done it many times before, and he was very good at it. Do you know what? I wish I had the guts to do this when I was younger, because I think everyone's thought similar things. However, I think you're a bit mean to John and his big grubby fingers, so I don't think I'm going to forgive you on this occasion.
Chocolate smeared blazer.
Oh, John and his big grubby fingers.
Brother from another dear.
I've got to applaud the elder son with the being able to not only reassemble the egg to make it look like no one, but then to spread this lie that everyone believes that he doesn't like milk chocolate. Everyone likes milk chocolate, and he's managed to convince everyone that he doesn't like milk chocolate, and therefore it couldn't possibly be him to have eaten any of the milk chocolate. So well done to him. And also the shop comes out of this well. What amazing customer service. They're giving you two eggs when you come back with half an egg. Wish I knew the name of the shop. Anyway, everyone came out of that excellently. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Terrible.
That was from day one I was going to bring an excellent gag in there.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
I mean, it doesn't really count as a gag, does it?
It does. It absolutely does. It counts as genius. It's cracking, is what it is.
People were clenching their buttocks, thinking, please don't let him do any more of those terrible gags. I think, as one of our listeners pointed out, back in the day, Easter eggs were easier to separate.
Yes.
Than they are now.
Yes, I think so. Certainly the posher ones now. That you can't separate, you have to eat the whole thing.
Oh, no.
They don't come into tea. Yes. They don't go into tea. And they're all decorated with, you know, spangles and glitter and all that.
Spangles?
Spangles?
Yeah. I don't think so.
Yes, they are. Not the sweets, obviously, but, you know, spangles. Yeah, spangles, as in fashion. Spangle fashion. We all know what that means. Everyone listening knows what I mean. They all know what I mean.
Do you mean sequins?
Spangle. No, spangle. These
spangles
things
are
that
sweets.
You have
they're boiled
that are
sweets.
On eggs and on fashion. Literally everyone knows what I mean.
Nobody
it's just
knows.
You two
nobody knows what you
don't
mean.
Don't understand what I mean.
Spangles were boiled sweets.
So yes,
that
I know then.
A long time ago.
I know then. But
soft
anyway,
centre spangles were really nice.
I wasn't a big fan of spangles.
Right.
Apart from on eggs and fashion.
If you have an item of fashion which has got a spangle on it, by all means get in touch. Right, let's go over to the parish notice board before this gets weirder.
Let's find out what's been happening this week, Matt.
Yes, we're going to start off with the latest roundup of reviews from iTunes. As ever, you only ever get onto this feature if you leave us a 5-star review. So, Lord and Lady Peachy in Kent, 5 stars. Mayo's magnificent menagerie of mayhem. Simon and his fine bunch of lads are the highlight of my week. Podcasts aren't my thing, but Simon, Brother Matt, Sister Susie, and the collective have shown me the light. The laugh out loud worthy stories and ballsy banter are just the tonic we all need. Greatest Hits Radio struck gold with you. Well done. Hammer Time 27 says 5 stars. Fan flaming tastic. The only podcast that I would recommend to all my friends and even people I don't like. Matt's common sense should be taught in schools throughout the land. Keep it up. Correct. Oh, and Pip in North Yorkshire, 5 star. Brilliant. You just get better and better. There is nothing on radio as genuinely funny and so easy to listen to. I usually listen daily, then have a weekend treat and hear you all over again.
Wow.
I don't think there's been anything on radio that's been just good fun since Hancock's Half Hour and the Navy Lark. What? So how far back is that? That's like 50 years, gotta be.
Well, and the rest, I think, because Hancock's Half Hour is like the 1950s.
Yes, that's 70 years. We're the funniest thing on radio in 70 years.
I think that's official.
Yes.
Radio 4 comedy must be weeping.
They are.
They would die to have something half as funny.
In 70 years, that's as good as this.
Wow.
Wonderful to have you back, says Pip. Try not to disappear again. And remember, if you do leave us a review or get a family member to leave a review, you could be featuring on this podcast next week, as long as it's 5 stars.
5 stars, obviously. Susie, what do you have to share with us?
I've got an email from Andy, who's got his own mini confession.
Right.
He said, "Hi, Simon. My name is Andy. I live in Shropshire, and I have a confession to make to my wife, Nola. We both like watching the TV quiz show, The 1% Club, which runs live on a Saturday evening. It's a quiz show where contestants try to answer questions only 1% of the country can get right. There are around 15 questions, so as you can imagine, it gets difficult the longer it goes on. We watch the live programme, and I use the app on my phone to play along individually. I need you to tell Nola, who's listening to the show, that before each TV show we watch, I pause it for 45 seconds before the start, unknown to Nola. I then press the play button again and use the phone app version that was running in real time, which means I get every answer right as the answers were given after the questions, as the TV is 45 seconds behind. Nola was amazed and said recently, to my surprise, she's applied for me to go on the real show, as each week I was getting every question right. So please tell her I'm sorry for cheating and I won't dream of doing this again." Andy Cook.
I've literally done that with Mastermind. I've done that with Mastermind and for the general knowledge round, and I've paused it while Jill's been out of the room and then pretended that I'm going along with it and I'm answering. She was so impressed. And she said, you should definitely go on this.
This
is amazing. You're getting more than getting right.
Is your whole marriage based on lies and confection?
And me trying to impress my
and
please.
Wearing spangles.
Does she wear spangles? No. Well,
she
would do, because as you correctly worked out, spangles are used in fashion. So glad to see everyone's coming round to Matt's way of thinking.
I'm sure you're thinking of sequins.
Oh no, I'm definitely thinking of spangles.
What do they look like?
They're sort of it's difficult to describe.
Yeah.
I bet it is.
Funny that. Right, I've got this from Adam. Simon, Matt, Susie and Holly in the cupboard. Thank you for... Holly's on holiday. Anyway, thank you for the Confessions podcast. Definitely scores 5 stars. Frustratingly, I often tune in to hear the words, "and for that reason, I'm going to forgive." So being able to hear them all, plus the tales from the crypt and the not-for-broadcast stuff, is something to look forward to every Friday. Donald's tale a few weeks ago about newspaper adverts took me back to serving in Northern Ireland with the army in the late 1980s. Already a frisson of nervousness.
Yes, there is from the production staff.
Yeah. We were expected to know the names and faces of the various members and associates of the prescribed organisations so that we could make note of their movements if we saw them and occasionally stop them for a friendly chat to inquire as to how their day was going and whether they had any plans of interest. Plans of interest is working very hard in that paragraph. Yeah. They were referred to as players. We also knew where they lived.
Okay.
I'm feeling slightly uncomfortable at this point.
How did this get through?
When not on patrol,
We would also have duties manning the company operations room, coordinating and spying, and activities of any outposts or deployed patrols, and maintaining communications with the battalion headquarters. This is... I'm not sure I'm allowed to read this.
I'm in my doubts now.
This involved a lot of sitting around just in case something happened. To while away the time, we were supplied with newspapers, and it was the Sunday papers in particular that I recall being packed with adverts like the one in Donald's confession. There were also quite a lot of ads that offered goods on a send-no-money-now basis. So predictably, we would fill in the coupons on behalf of the players so that they would benefit from whatever was being offered. Would this be like PSYOPs?
Feels like it, doesn't it?
It's like a mini-series in the making. I feel James Nesbitt will be
a lead role
somewhere. If I were to be asking for forgiveness, said Adam, hopefully not his real name, let's say it's James Nesbitt, it would not be from the players, for whom I like to think we were providing a valuable service because they were often quite rude to us. I bet they were.
Okay.
When we sought to engage in our friendly chats. But I suppose we should apologise for the various advertisers who ended up wasting time and money when responding to the coupons. Thanks again and best wishes, Adam. There you are. You see, lax rules on a podcast certainly would not get broadcast on the radio.
Definitely not.
Thank you for everything that you're sending to us. If you want to contribute to the notice board, confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Quick few mentions from me for Tracy Fry, Bill Pickard and Catherine Beek, who were among those brave enough to tweet the secret phrase from last week's podcast, which was, of course, "Have a Waz, Jerry." Mm-hmm. Keep listening through to the end of this podcast to pick up this week's entertaining secret code phrase, which, if you're on secret operations for the army, you might want to pass on to the players.
Players,
as you're sending them more strange literature. Right, some of the not-for-broadcast confessions for this week, although I feel as though with the Northern Ireland one, we've kind of already,
already touched
on that. First of all, person just referred to as A. Even if you are all for equality, it's simply not very PC that you called a rather round, bald, flamboyant man who worked in your local supermarket Big Rita consistently. Especially as one day on your way home, it dawned on you that the customer service lady told you to speak to the greeter with the microphone and you simply misheard her. So it's the greeter, not the, Big Rita. Okay.
That's okay. He misheard. That's okay.
Well, flamboyant and round, bald, fat. Anyway, Rich, I know you were trying to help. You were a police officer after all. But not making sure the driver of the broken down car understood English before you discussed how you and the other officers were going to give him a push start was unforgivable, especially as you continued to push him down a hill and watched as he didn't release the clutch or even steer as the car headed straight into a brick wall.
Well, hang on, he's steering the car. Why isn't he steering the car? If you're heading for a brick wall, steer the car away from the wall.
It was lucky no one was hurt. The car, however, wasn't so lucky.
Well, not his fault, I'm going to say.
What? And for that reason...
And for that reason, I choose to forgive.
Of course.
There are very few police confessions that get through.
For good reason.
For good reason. Also, cleaning lady, thank you for getting in touch. It is understandable that you wanted to get your own back on a, quote, jerk who kept interrupting you with smarmy comments while you were just trying to do your job cleaning the toilets. Mm. And you did put quite a lot of effort into the old lady disguise you used. However, when you went into graphic detail describing the scene in the toilets, including something that reminded you of peanuts mixed with chocolate, you took it a bit too far for Tea Time Radio, and I think everyone is going to be agreeing with me on that. Especially considering that after this, the fire brigade were called out because you wanted to see how much pressure was actually needed to break the glass while you were cleaning the fire alarm. A disreputable and disgraceful confession.
Yeah, fair enough. That one's not getting on.
From cleaning lady. Can you imagine doing that? It would just have been...
No. And peanut butter and chocolate. That's
not a nice combo.
Nope.
Peanut butter and Marmite always works quite nicely on toast.
You've said this before, yeah. Peanut butter and Marmite.
It's a campaign.
Is it really? Okay.
And crunchy peanut butter, which I think cleaning lady was referring to, is fine.
It's really... I'm not a peanut butter fan, really. Not my thing.
Do you know what it is?
Yes, I know what it is.
Not like chili jam. Not like
spangles.
Spangles.
Put it on fashion.
I bet we get sent some spangles.
If they're still going, I'll absolutely take those bangles.
Not that anyone will know where we are because we've changed our address. No. Anyway, getting back to the confessions that did make the cut, with a bonus confession that's not featured on the podcast yet, here is Chunky's Condiments confession. I will try to fix you.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone.
Today's confession comes from Chunky. Thanks, Chunky. Mm. Father Simon and the persistently predictable pair and the great British public. Way back when there were only three TV channels available and the few good radio stations were on medium wave, I worked at a large manufacturing site. At its zenith, it employed north of 1,500 people. To keep all of us fed and to minimise the temptation to nip down the road to the pub at half-time, the firm provided a works canteen. Not a lot of those around these days. Eating in it was a distinctly Soviet-feeling affair. Grimy, cheap plastic chairs, tabletop stained by the spillage of hot, ridiculously strong tea, plastic cutlery, not even any condiments on the table, lest the salt and pepper shakers should get stolen. Instead, at one end of the serving counter stood a row of cardboard boxes from whence one could pluck the necessary flavours, tiny paper sachets for salt and pepper, larger plastic versions for vinegar, brown sauce, etc. These were not the brightly coloured branded items you will nowadays find in a pint pot at every pub carvery. No, in keeping with the industrial vibe, they were plain plastic sachets with their contents identified in a single line of teeny tiny print. But hey, they were freebies, so it was the custom, especially if it was your turn on the canteen run, to grab what in these parts we call a slack handful of everything to take back. Most would inevitably end up in the bin or in the desk drawers, overalls or jacket pockets. Plus, there was always someone who needed to perk up their sandwiches or a limp salad that they'd brought from home. One evening after work, I went to pick up my then-girlfriend, now wife of 40-plus years. When I walked into the house, her dad was his usual jovial self, but mother was distinctly out of character, crotchety, sharp, somewhat distracted, verging on unpleasant even. And it transpired that having recently semi-retired and living a life of semi-leisure, she had taken up swimming two mornings a week. Inevitably, this was the 70s, remember, she was now suffering from a severe case of athlete's foot, and the itching was driving her slowly insane. She tried everything they had in the house, including that pink ointment that used to come in little round tins and smelled of wintergreen, all without success. Not to worry, I said. The changing room showers at work are infested with wood rot. Foot rot, beg your pardon. Both of which probably true.
And the
medical centre dishes out gallons of the stuff to get rid of it. Hold on a minute. So I nipped out to the car for a rummage in the glove box. I selected my ointment sachets. Yes, the paper sachets from the works canteen. And a quick tickle with a felt tip pen obscured all evidence of the contents. I then returned. You'll need to rub this between your toes, I said, but only every other day, not more often. Leave it on for an hour, then wash your feet really thoroughly. Please be careful, though, this stuff is industrial strength. So once you've opened a sachet, wrap what's left in a newspaper, put it straight in the bin. And you'll need to wear gloves. And for heaven's sake, keep it away from your eyes, mouth and nose. Future mother-in-law was under the sink reaching for the marigolds before we got out the door. Now, I don't know if it was the placebo effect, Father Simon, or if the pink stuff had finally done the job, but future wife reported that her mother was completely cured. Not only that, she'd passed the spare sachets on to another member of the oldies swimming club, and could I get some more? It was only then that I revealed that her mother had spent nigh on a fortnight rubbing tartar sauce between her toes. I was sure that the old girl would have twigged, but apparently not. I'd even had to include a couple of sachets of salad cream and one of ketchup to make up the numbers. I can only assume that the non-gherkin-based sauces had ended up among those that had been handed on. Once my girlfriend had finished laughing her face off, I was soundly chastised in a fashion that has been developed as a precision tool over these last 40-odd years. I was instructed to fess up, which, uniquely, I believe, for your confession slot, I reluctantly did. Future mother-in-law was okay with this news. Moreover, and here's the kicker, she was keen to go out and promote the newly discovered healing power of something you could get for 15p a jar at the supermarket instead of paying a fortune at the chemist. The entire oldies swimming club was suffering with this disease, and she was determined to help. I advised against, but the die was cast, and so I humbly seek forgiveness and absolution. Not for misleading the woman who gave birth to the greatest gift a man could ever have. The woman who would type my university thesis, who babysat our kids and looked after our dog when we went on holiday. She suffered many wind-ups over the years and took them all with smiling acceptance. But am I concerned? Well, there's a small corner of my hometown that there are still family descendants of those swimmers still mistakenly using Granny's old remedy of tartar sauce to cure foot rot. Yours faithfully, even, Chunky. This is an interesting thing because it may well have been a placebo effect. And obviously we say don't try this at home. There is no evidence that tartar sauce or brown sauce or any of those condiments can cure athlete's foot. Sister Holly looking stern.
Well, Chunky, this is disgusting, this confession. It's so gross. The thought of someone rubbing tartar sauce on their foot and then they're not washing it, they're just keeping it there
for an hour.
And they're putting their socks on. Oh, it's sick and wrong. Sick and wrong. And that's why I don't forgive.
Well, you would think it would sting like crazy, wouldn't you?
Well, you would think, wouldn't you? But the story has told us different, hasn't it? And what a fabulous little journey down memory lane this was with salt sachets and refectories and in offices and foot rot and tartar sauce. You never see that anymore.
Yes, you do.
And tartar sauce.
You have to have tartar sauce with your fried pot.
Never seen it again. And what are the active ingredients in tartar sauce? Perhaps we'll never know.
Maybe that's
what's working with the foot rot. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Do you think there is anything, maybe some surgeons also, not surgeons, GPs might know, is there anything that in tartar sauce which would cure foot rot?
I think we need a chemist, don't we? We need a chemist who can tell us
something that's in tartar sauce.
If anyone can find it.
Let's assume that there isn't anything in any condiment that you put on food which you should be putting on your feet.
Very interesting medical issues there. Yeah. I love the fact that Holly, making an appearance,
yes,
obviously not on holiday,
no.
Sick and wrong. She really meant that.
I could feel it.
Were you on holiday again, Susie? Were you just giving birth or something?
Not
quite. I had a newborn at that point.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, yes.
Good reason.
Yes, good reason for not doing it.
Yes. Sick and wrong. Still to come, a bikini malfunction with hilarious consequences in this week's Confession from the Crypt. Limbering up for the school sports day with the competitive parents for Marmaduke's confession. The race is in my head. But not before Jeff's confession. Last train to London.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
A confession today from Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. Father Simon and the Charitable Collective of Clemency, I seek absolution for my late, dearly departed father, William, known as Bill, a man who served his king, queen and country for over 40 years. I'm sure your forgiveness will go some way to ensure he gets a plump cloud pillow to rest his weary head. Confused theology here, but anyway, carry on. Reader's note, there will be a requirement for 1950s Edinburgh accents and an Edith Evans voice from the 1952 film The Importance of Being Earnest.
Even better.
I know that Father Simon will hit the mark with both of these.
I'm not
going anywhere near a 1950s Edinburgh accent.
Oh, really?
After my father's national service, he was looking for a new role, one that would fully utilise his newfound sense of pride in a uniform, a position many people would turn to for help and advice. One where he could take on the burden of the many and help with their journey in life. He became a railway porter at Edinburgh's Waverley Station, a grand station in the 1950s full of steam and passengers travelling the length and breadth of post-war Britain. Now, I know many of your listeners will not know what a railway porter is or did at the time, but they did vital work in the days of steam. Anyone who knows Waverley will be familiar with the two ramps in and out of the station, sadly all but closed off these days. But in the heyday of the 50s, this was a busy thoroughfare with taxis driving in with passengers, porters greeting them with their trolleys and whisking them off to the platform to catch their train. This work was done for a small wage and tips, so the wealthy and the celebrities were always the ideal passengers to help. On the day in question, it was close to 1 o'clock and the departure of the express train to London, when a taxi raced in with a driver wildly gesticulating to my father. He rushed over to be told that his passenger, an elderly lady, had a ticket for a 1 o'clock train to London, a train she had to catch as she had an important appointment in London to get to. Not a problem, my dad said, sounding reminiscent of a young Sean Connery.
Oh, here we go.
Go on.
Yeah. The London train is on platform one, waiting to go. I'm not,
anything like it.
I'm not going to go there. But it'll be a close-run thing to get there, says my dad. Quickly piling all of the ladies' bags onto his trolley, my dad moved like a gazelle among the busy thoroughfare, dodging other porters and passengers through the steam of the stationary trains. Up to first class, swung the door open and loaded the ladies' luggage into the compartment and helped her board the train. Thank you, young man. You are an angel and have saved the day.
You can do that.
Yay. Thank you. Then she thrust a note into his hand. The conductor waved his flag, blew his whistle, and the train departed in a huge flurry of steam and hissing as it pulled out of the station. On looking down at his hand, my father discovered it was a 10-shilling note, truly a king's ransom back in the day. With a handsome reward in his hand, my dad thought he'd earned a break and went to the porter's break room, where all the old sweats were seated, reading the paper, smoking their pipes and cleaning their boots. They all looked up and saw my dad looking very pleased with himself and holding a monetary note of some stature. "What have you got there, laddie?" said the head porter, obviously not in the voice.
No.
"I've got a 10-shilling tip from an old lady I just put on a train at platform one."
Really?
Suddenly we're in the Wild West.
Okay. This is when the rest of the porters stopped talking, lowered their newspapers, stopped shining their boots, and took their pipes out of their mouths.
Okay.
Old poetic license. The head porter tilted his head to one side and said, "Laddie, the London train was not on platform one." "Aye, it was," said my dad. "I saw it then. I put the old lady on it just before it left at 1 o'clock. What happened next haunted my dad until his dying day. The head porter stood up, walked over to my dad, took the 10-shilling note from his hand, looked at it, held it up to the light, and then handed it back, saying, "Don't spend it all at once, laddie, just in case. If you bother to read the notice board, you'll see that because of engineering works at Berwick, the 1 o'clock London was moved to platform 18.
Oh no,
said my dad. "What have I done?" The head porter looked right at him and said, "Laddie, if I'm not mistaken, that old lady is on the non-stop train to Aberdeen." Obviously, if I could do the accents, everything would be so much better, but I can't. Fortunately for all the rail passengers in the 1950s, my dad decided to join up and re-enlisted in the army in 1955 and served for 22 years before returning to Civvy Street. I would like to seek eternal forgiveness for my dad from the old lady who found herself on the non-stop to Aberdeen and probably didn't realise until she was trundling across the Fourth Bridge. And from the entire workforce at the British Railways, I fear the old lady may have been related to Dr. Beeching, and his cuts to the railways in the 60s meant that 13,000 miles of railways were lost and closed, and that might have been revenge and retribution for what happened that day in 1953. I mean, again, I think you're taking historical license. Yours in admiration and hope, Jeff, not his real name, obviously, although we have used his dad's real name, so anyway.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Anyway, Sister Susie, what do you say to Jeff?
Well, Jeff, do you know what a picture you painted? And do you know what? There's nothing that makes me more nervous than getting on the wrong train. I have done it once before.
Me too.
And luckily, both the trains stopped at the first stop together. So I just got off that one and then I got on mine
Smooth.
2 minutes later.
Mm.
No one knew that I'd made the mistake. So for that reason, I feel like just because I've done it myself, I have to forgive you.
A very evocative confession.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was steam everywhere.
And hissing. What do you
and
say?
And pipes. Loving it. It was a gorgeous journey, isn't it? From Edinburgh up to Aberdeen on the train. So,
not if you want to go south to London.
Well, she will have enjoyed it all the same. Probably better than going to London, I would have said. So everyone wins out of this. And actually, you know, if you want to catch the train on time, get to the station on time. So actually, it's her fault for turning up late. For that reason,
yes.
I'm going to forgive Bill and therefore Jeff.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Marmaduke. Not my real name.
Mm-hmm.
Father Simon, the Confessional Collective, it is with a heavy heart, reverent embarrassment, that after over 20 years of shame, I now ask for forgiveness from the collective for my sins. I take you back to June 1993, when I was the proud father of a newborn son, Walter, not his real name, 8 weeks old. He was on show for the first time at a large gathering, that of the school sports day for the infant and junior school, where his three sisters, Natalie, Stephanie and Clara Bella, not their real names.
Oh, changed them as well, have we?
Yes, right. They were attending. Yep. School sports days bring out the best and worst in everything. Mm-hmm. The weather, either really sunny and too hot for the children, or overcast and rainy so that the event is cancelled. Or indeed with family members. The best turn up with the sole intent of cheering on everyone, be they sporty children or those children who don't wish to participate but are forced to by teachers to take part in the sack race. And the worst parents who turn up with a win-at-all-costs attitude. Mm-hmm. One little girl benefited year on year from her cheating competitive mother, who was always a judge and no matter what, in close races would ensure that her child won. There could be clear daylight between the real winner and her daughter, but the winner's sash always went to her daughter. The father of this little girl was also unsurprisingly competitive and for 3 years running had turned up in his official Amateur Athletics Association running vest and, worse, his silk running shorts. On one occasion, he donned a pair of running spikes, which he was asked not to wear ever again. He would do 30 minutes of track side warming up exercises while the school children were racing. Yeah, yeah. When the parents' 100 metres was announced, Linford, as we called him, would jog to the start line and each year blast out of the blocks, leaving several aged dads in trainers and suits in his wake. His wife and daughter would be at the winning line, mother holding not one but two stopwatches. Upon winning, he would ask his wife and daughter whether he'd beaten his all-comers record time of 11.2 seconds. I mean, that's fast, before beginning his warming down exercises. Yeah. On this particular occasion, parents were called to the start line and Linford crouched low in his sprinter's stance. As the gun went off, he surged into what would have been an unassailable lead if it had not been for me and another like-minded father. We were positioned either side of him and both stepped across his path. Both being ex-rugby players, adept at the now illegal shoulder charge tackle, we took him out, one going high, the other one going low, in what we hoped looked like an accidental coming together. Down he went in a heap of legs and arms entwined with me and my conspirator friend as he tried manfully to regain his feet and get back into the race, which he could still easily win. I grabbed at his silky shorts to prevent him chasing off after the aged pack of suit-wearing fathers. Down he went again with an anguished wail of despair sounding like a wounded animal. As he got to his feet, he witnessed a grey-haired grandfather crossing the line in an astonishing 17 seconds, the first new winner of the event for 3 years. Linford's wife and daughter were watching from the finishing line, open-mouthed, tears in their eyes, waiting for his speedy arrival, and instead witnessed a broken man. My co-conspirator and I apologised to Linford and suggested maybe he could make amends to his daughter by winning the mixed group egg and spoon race later.
Yeah.
To our surprise, he took us up on the offer and arrived at the start line, silky shorts and running vest shining again in the sunlight. He chose his egg and spoon, the eggs being potatoes, so they could be picked up when dropped. He set off at a startling pace down the track, however, dropped his egg on several occasions, whilst I, running smoothly and without dropping my egg, swept past him and across the line to win the prize. A double whammy for Linford. Yeah. He fell over in the 100 metres and failed to win the egg and spoon race. Do I ask the collective for forgiveness for taking him out with my shoulder? No. Do I ask forgiveness for pulling him down when he tried to get to his feet? No. Do I ask forgiveness for causing his wife and daughter distress? No, he deserved everything he got. I do, however, ask the collective for your forgiveness because I cheated in winning the egg and spoon race. I jammed the handle of the spoon into the egg, which was a potato, so that it could not fall off no matter how fast I ran.
Yes.
Getting to the end and falling over the line whilst removing the potato from the handle and taking the winner's sash. Ta-da! That's what I ask forgiveness for, winning by means of the inappropriate use of a spoon handle. Lots of love from Marmaduke. Not my real name. Mm-hmm. To no one's great surprise. Now in my mid-late 60s and remembering every single moment. Every parent listening will have experienced the horrors of the parents' race at the sports day. We're getting quite early with sports day confessions. But anyway, Sister Susie from the pub.
Well, Marmaduke, do you know what? We could have had a slightly different confession when you were grabbing at those silky shorts. It was quite worrying there. Ding. However, dong. I feel like he limped for... did deserve what he had coming to him. Yes. Because, you know, he just didn't sound like a very nice person, did he? Just no one likes that person. I'm not a sporty person, so I think I'm on your side, Marmaduke. can I forgive you for sticking the spoon in the potato, though? Because that is just cheating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a tricky one, but I'm feeling generous, so go on, I'll forgive you.
Okay, brother from another gunner.
You've got to admire Linford's commitment in deciding to do warming up as well. Not only am I going to turn up in spikes and my top and my silky shorts, I'm going to do my warming up and
nauseating.
Warming down.
Yeah, nauseating.
Absolutely. It felt like grabbing his shorts was a step too far. I mean, you couldn't shoulder barge, but grabbing his shorts, dear oh dear. But I'm going to forgive, because obviously none of us are particularly liking Linford or his wife or his daughter, who was getting everything pandered to her on a plate. And do we blame him for, you know, sticking the spoon in the potato? Well, if the school aren't going to provide eggs, this is what's going to happen. So it's the system. Once again, it's the system that is to blame. And for that reason, jog on, Linford, I am going to forgive.
I don't think there's any school egg and spoon race where they actually use eggs, because
I don't think they do now.
Just
do
break.
They?
Well, you were talking rubbish then.
Well, no, I think what they use instead is bean bags, don't they? They use bean bags.
It's even more
bags.
Ridiculous.
Bean bags on the spoon, though. So you've got to run with the bean bag on the spoon. The bean bag falls off, then you've lost.
That's very easy to keep a bean bag on a spoon.
No, it's not. It's because it's the same as an egg. But it's a beanbag.
It's
a completely different shape.
And the beauty of it is that if the beanbag falls on the floor, it doesn't crack like an egg.
Or a potato.
Or a potato.
Which would make more sense.
Well, no. Yeah.
No. Anyway, Marmaduke's confession encouraged Diane to get in touch. Totally forgiven, Simon. My daughter attended a rather posh Catholic girls' school in Sussex, and on sports day, there was a parents' race which involved an egg and spoon race with a boiled egg. Not a bean bag.
No.
I was not a particularly sporty person, and when handed my egg and spoon from the father's race beforehand, I noted my egg had been dropped and so the shell was cracked. Like your confessor, I too pushed the head of the spoon in the space between the eggshell and the boiled part.
Go on.
And when the whistle went, I set off at my fastest pace, miraculously outrunning all the yummy mummies who ran marathons and did Pilates.
and were
balancing their eggs on the spoon. Well, mine didn't move an inch. I was caught on the line, so thankfully didn't win. But being a Catholic school, I did confess to what I had done and gained the complete admiration from my daughter and her friends.
Oh, good work.
Ah, nice.
So, Diane, thank you very much indeed. I think Sports Day will just deliver a bunch of confessions.
Always
I
does.
Expect.
Yeah.
Time to dig out a confession from the crypt, and this week's request comes from Libby. Simon, Matt and Susie, the confession I'd love to hear again had me crying on the car ride home. It involved a bikini malfunction, a bald man, a boat ladder, and the line Tenacious Pants.
Oh, yes.
Please, can you find it and replay it?
Mm-hmm.
Libby, we can do just that. Here is the blushing lady's confession we called Snakes and Ladders.
Something to confess. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession comes with a PG certificate, I think. And it comes from the blushing lady. Thanks, blushing lady. Father Simon, with enormous shame, I seek forgiveness from the hallowed Trinity. Father Simon, Brother Matthew, Sister Susie, offering penance from the pub. Shameful incident I am about to confess is a permanent blemish on my memory. Decided it's time to seek absolution for my sins. In my younger days, as a carefree traveller, I had visited the beautiful islands off the Turkish coast. Having eagerly booked myself onto a boat day trip, I clambered on board the Blushing Lady Cruiser with my fellow tourists. I remember taking note of the unusual name of the ship as I stepped on board, not realising that later that very day it would be oddly prophetic. We'd enjoyed a magical day of azure waters and scorching sun. Circling in the more shallow waters of the bay, the smiling captain invited us to dive off the ship into the inviting ocean below. I confess, Father Simon, at this point I ignored my intuition, which told me this would be unwise given my history of watery experiences. Too torturous to go into here, and I belly flopped happily into the waiting waves below.
Ouch.
The sheer sense of relief in having bobbed up above the surface of the water was soon replaced by a feeling of utter panic. I felt my rather generous chest break free from my bikini top, and I realised I had come adrift, so to speak.
Oh, goodness me.
Seeing all the other tourists floating around happily, right. I realised I would have to get myself strapped back in urgently.
Yes, you think you're blushing, man.
As I frantically fiddled with the fastening at the back of my top, I felt myself going under. In my mind at that moment, the choice was clear. I either drowned or swam back to the ship.
Oh, my goodness.
One more try, and I managed to secure my errant chest, and I swam back gratefully in the direction of the waiting ship. The still-smiling captain was now waving the swimmers aboard, and there was a succession of tan bodies scrambling up the ladder of the ship to get safely back on deck. By the time I'd swum back, I was utterly exhausted. With all the energy I'd exerted getting myself strapped back in, I hauled myself up the ladder, my legs like jelly, and a queue of mostly gentlemen behind me, waiting not so patiently on the rungs below. And this is where I must seek forgiveness from the Holy Trinity, as what happened next must surely be etched in the memories of all who were present at the scene. Through sheer exhaustion, I gave up the fight to climb up the ladder and squatted down heavily, sitting squarely on the head of the gentleman on the ladder. On the rung below. Not only that, the weight of the seawater in my bikini bottoms dragged them down too. So now the man had not only my wet bottom, but also my wet pants wrapped around his balding head.
Was that necessary? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He shouted at me, what can I can only assume was a profanity in a foreign tongue.
Yes.
Looking down at him, it was clear he had been temporarily blinded and muffled by both my bottom and bottoms. He'd nearly fallen off the ladder himself. He was waving one hand at me while trying to disentangle himself from my bikini bottoms with the other.
Oh, wow.
Wondering what all the commotion was, the captain, who was no longer smiling, leant over and gestured wildly at me to hurry up. At this point, the balding gentleman had freed himself from the tenacious pants and are now...
Seen them live.
Yep, that's a phrase I've never used before. And had now regained his sight and speech. He yelled at me again, and with a gargantuan effort on my part, I clambered up the remaining steps to safety, heading quickly to my seat on deck in the protection of my beach towel. I did not move again for the entire trip back to shore. Safe to say, I've never revisited Turkey, nor have I... Not that it's Turkey's fault. Nor have I jumped off any more boats. Bikinis have not adorned my wardrobe from that day of shame onwards. I seek forgiveness from the most revered Trinity for the poor gentleman who'd been blissfully enjoying a beautiful day of sun and sea and then temporarily blinded and muted by the bottom.
Blinded by the...
I would also like to seek forgiveness from the lady who gave her name to the magnificent ship we sailed in on that fateful day. I feel I have forever sullied the reputation of the original blushing lady, who is probably some pious sister who would never stoop to display such indecency, not once, but twice in one day. Well, I humbly await your verdict and see what's going to happen here, Sister Susie, from the pub.
Well, do you know what? That really made me laugh, and I feel for her because you go swimming and you just don't know what's going to happen.
No.
You can be a man or a woman, and you could, lose your swimmers. And then you've got to deal with the situation, Matt. And I'm sure you've been there as well.
Lose your swimmers.
You might lose it. The current, you don't know what's going to happen. The elastic might be loose. Who knows? But I'm going to forgive you just for the image that's put in my head.
Brother from another gutter.
That is the best laugh I've had this week. I am going to heartily predict right now that this one wins the smart speaker tomorrow. Or put it this way, tomorrow's had better be very good to beat that. So I am definitely going to forgive. My errant chest, fabulous.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Errant chest.
Yes.
Errant chest.
Yeah.
That's
so that must have been from the days when we were only giving away one smart speaker.
See, now the generosity is extraordinary because everyone that gets read out, you get a smart speaker.
Everyone's
another smart speaker if you get included in the podcast or, from back in the day.
No. There's no royalties.
No. We can't actually run to that, I'm afraid. But if you have a request for a classic confession about an errant chest or tenacious pants or something like that, let us know. And even if you've got a confession and you might want to exchange it for a smart speaker, confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Over to Brother Matthew for this week's secret code phrase.
And this week's secret code phrase is spangles on your eggs. Spangles on your eggs is this week's secret code phrase.
If you've listened this far, you can tweet me at Simon Mayo on Twitter slash X. On Threads.
Still on the Threads. Excellent.
Still on the Threads. Mr. Simon Mayo there.
Yeah. Course.
And also on Blue Sky. Lots of people joining Blue Sky now.
All the time, are they?
They are.
Crashing down the doors.
They're just making me feel at home there. Anyway, don't forget to follow and review for extra points and keep telling everyone that the Confessions podcast is back. Until next time, from the pub, this is Sister Susie.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Yep. Wow. Okay.
From the gutter, this is Brother Matthew.
So long.
Farewell.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Adieu.
To you.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
Spangle. There we go. A spangle was the English word. This isn't what I meant, but anyway.